Okay, I have 3:30, so we will call the Finance and Audit Committee meeting to order. Can everybody hear me okay?
Sure can.
I see present, we have myself, Joel Ashbrenner, and Sue Hubbard of the board. I miss any other board members? Andrea, perhaps?
I'm here.
Yeah, I see you.
Good to see you all. First item is the financial system software. Ted, can you take us away?
Absolutely, Joel. I do want to mention that I see Andrea. I think she's the INHF Zoom participant here, just to be sure that everyone.
Yes.
We have three board members present.
That is me. I apologize.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, thank you. We've got two presentations here today, Joel, both interesting. The first one we're going to talk about, Michelle Holland is actually going to talk about our financial system software and replacing the current system that we are using today. She's going to go through that in some detail, but we've been using PeopleSoft Financials since 1999, actually. It's been updated a few times since then, which she can get into a little bit, but it was last updated in 2005. And so it's time for upgrade or replacement on that. And then Amy is going to talk to us about refunding some of our water revenue bonds that were used to construct some of our facilities, and some really interesting opportunities and considerations there that I think the board will find fascinating, or at least I did, some options that we might have there. So two interesting things with that. I think I'll turn it over to Michelle and let her share with us about the financial system software replacement.
All right, so let me make sure I have my technology keeping up with me. I think I have taken myself off of mute. So step one, I see some heads nodding, so that's a good thing. Next, I'm going to attempt to share my screen with a PowerPoint presentation. And what are you seeing? Are you seeing the PowerPoint?
I am, Michelle, and it looks good. The first slide is showing in presentation mode, so it looks good.
Okay, very good. So I will go ahead and get started. So I wanted to give a short presentation today on potentially replacing our financial management system. Currently, as Ted mentioned, I'm going to try to get to my next screen. There we go. As Ted mentioned, we use PeopleSoft Financials. The functions that we utilize in PeopleSoft Financials is our general ledger. The general ledger basically drives all of our financial reporting. It's the basis of the much of the monthly financial reports that you all receive and file every month with our financials on them. It's also the basis for our audited financial statements. So that's really where our auditors start, is they get our general ledger balances and details, and that's the starting point for the audit, and then the build up to what ends up to be our audited financial statements. Project costing, that really is kind of another big area that PeopleSoft Financials does for us, and really what makes us as a utility a little bit unique. Whereas we can't just go out and buy, you know, an off-the-shelf financial software, project costing kind of makes us a little bit different. This is where we charge all of our labor expenses, all of our invoices, all of our expenses to different projects and activity IDs. And, you know, by doing project level accounting, we're able to track, you know, how much we spend on chemicals and energy at each of the three treatment plants. We have a project for main breaks, repairing main breaks, and then we have activity IDs that then say where, you know, where we did the repair of that main breaks and track those main breaks and tracks those costs, whether it be for the Des Moines Inside City or if it's out in Polk County or what have you. On the capital side, we have projects for such things as when we go out and paint a tower. So the labor, the expenses, the contractors, things like that, you know, or rehabbing a collector well. So project costing really is a big deal for us. And by charging these projects, all the different expenses, what we get out of that is detailed management reporting. That's how we build our budget, is by project. Project costing is also the driver in our cost of service, which then also allows for setting by the individual rate classes and the service areas. So project costing is kind of the big meat of what we use PeopleSoft for. Along with a couple other things, accounts payable. We pay our vendors, process invoices, cut checks through the PeopleSoft system. We use their fixed asset management module. With those capital projects, we create fixed assets within PeopleSoft, which then, you know, is depreciated over their useful lives, things like that. And then we have a couple of other more finance-centric type things, cost allocations and banking, so reconciliations and things like that. Some history of PeopleSoft. As Ted mentioned, we implemented it in 1999, so about 22 years ago. And as you can see, I put a little screenshot below of what the system looks like. I was sitting here thinking as I was preparing for this 22 years ago, kind of where technology was and all of that sort of thing. I have kids about 22 years old, and I remember I was using AOL dial-up. Remember the old, some of you might be a little younger than that, but, you know, and the twanging that it did and all of that sort of thing. So that's kind of in the time frame of when PeopleSoft was implemented. We last upgraded in 2005. That was a decision that we made then. You know, upgrading is expensive, it's complex, it's time consuming. And so, you know, our last upgrade was in 2005. In 2009, we actually switched from Oracle support to a third party support vendor called Rimini Street. They now provide support for us. You know, when we have questions, issues, things like that, we're able to contact them. They also provide annual updates as far as, you know, we do have to issue 1099s to some of our AP vendors. So they provide that support for us as well and updates so that we're able to do that out of our PeopleSoft system. The cost, we capitalized in 1999, $3.1 million for the PeopleSoft system. So, you know, pretty big chunk, especially back in that time frame. Few facts and figures of what's in PeopleSoft. General ledger accounts, we have over 300 active accounts. AP vendors, so these are the vendors that we pay. We have a little over 3,200 active vendors, a total of 15,000 vendors over the last 22 years, but 3,200 that are still active. Accounts payable checks, we process 7,800 checks per year. And when you consider that we have, that many of those checks are made up of multiple invoices, we do process, we pay a lot of vendors. Actually, we pay them every week. So we do process quite a bit of AP. Capital assets, we have 5,400, a little over 5,400 capital assets. And project codes, 450 project codes. Again, that's, you know, the treatment plant chemicals, that's the repairing of main breaks, that's, you know, any of those sorts of things. Activity IDs, 40 activity IDs, those are really the service areas. Again, examples being Des Moines Inside City, Polk County, Pleasant Hill, and that such thing. And then the big number I wanted to share with you, the number of rows in that project resource table. So this is the accumulation of data over the last 22 years. 4.3 million records in that project resource table, which is, you know, based on that project accounting with the general ledger and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, with that many rows, all that data in there, we are seeing performance issues with PeopleSoft. You know, it runs slowly, it churns for a while. You know, we have instances where we're running through processes and we get kicked out and have to go back in and try again. So, you know, just a lot of things going on there. A couple of other things, you know, we're running on old versions of software that are no longer supported by Microsoft, and we are unable to upgrade certain components such as the operating system or the database to the current versions. So, you know, it's old, it's churning away, and, you know, might just be time to look to something else. So what's next? In May of 2021, so a few months ago, we sent RFIs, so request for information, to several vendors, 10, I believe, and we received 3 responses. So based on those responses, we were able to come up with an estimate of about $1.8 million of non-labor expenses to replace PeopleSoft financials. Non-labor expenses, that being those fees like licensing, consulting services, you know, just the implementation services to get this up and running. So about $1.8 million. This project has been included in the last several 5-year CIPs, those capital improvement plans that we bring forth usually in the springtime. So this has been included in that for the last several years. The amount estimated in the most recent CIP was about $4 million spread over 2 years. So with this RFI that we did, you know, we are able to, you know, we see that about, it's going to cost about $1.8 million instead of that $4 million that we had estimated with the CIP. So that in and of itself is good news. So we are planning on including this project in the 2022 budget that will come to the board for your approval later this fall. We still need to have some internal discussions here with finance and IT staff on how long we realistically expect this project to take, whether we include the full project cost in the 2022 budget, or, you know, if we do think that it will take, you know, over, you know, more than 2022. So if it might go into 2023. So we still need to work on those discussions and kind of see what the general timeline would be. So, you know, what we would like to do is, you know, we would like to draft a more formal RFP, you know, schedule some vendor presentations, tighten up the costs, and determine a project timeline. You know, ideally, if the project is approved, we'd like to jump in pretty quickly in early 2022 and get the ball rolling on this. So, and really, that's all I have. Any questions for me on that?
Michelle, I'm a little outside of my comfort zone, but I'll ask anyway. So I understand, I took away that the project costing is the aspect that makes using like an off-the-shelf software system feasible for the utility. Is that type of project costing normal for an entity like Waterworks, or is there something particular about the way we do things that I guess is that the way we're doing project costing, is that typical?
You know, I guess I don't know that I can say whether it's typical, but, you know, as far as our, and certainly Ted and or Amy, feel free to jump in. But, you know, because we have these different service areas, you know, that we need to segregate these costs of what it costs to maintain treatment plants and core assets versus how much it costs to repair water main in, say, you know, Pleasant Hill or Polk County or things like that. So it's pretty imperative, you know, so that then we can prepare the cost of service to then establish costs for those different service areas. You know, that's what makes us a little bit unique, is because we have these multiple areas that we provide water to.
Okay. You know, I would add that I think it makes us unique in a very good way. As we talk to different utilities, and certainly we've appreciated this, you know, as we've worked with the surrounding communities throughout regionalization, I think the detail to which we record our expenses and costs has been very helpful. And it allows us, you know, maybe a degree of precision or accuracy that is difficult to achieve without the project costing. And I also think a lot of utilities don't do an annual cost of service. You know, they may do one every now and again, but because we do the cost of service, that project costing has really been our bread and butter. And no one, you know, everyone groans when they have to record their time to projects and, you know, write on an invoice what project it goes to. But it is worth the effort.
And Amy, I'm so glad you brought up that point, because I was thinking about that in regards to regionalization. And one of the comments from West Des Moines, when we were talking about cost of service, and I don't think that the cost of their general manager was being added in, and we were so comprehensive in every cost being tagged to something. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think that it's an important way to make sure we include all costs.
Yeah.
And it makes billing for things so easy too. When we bill for annual or monthly maintenance in one of the remote facilities, like the LP Moon pumping station, it's all, you know, there are activity IDs for the whole facility and for the, each side, depending on whether it's Urbandale or Clive, West Des Moines, and Waukee. And all of those bills are very defensible. There's never a question that we can't answer about, were these really our costs? And I think it's critically important, given the wholesale nature of our sales and the kind of the breadth of customers that we serve, to have this kind of detail. But I think it's unusual, frankly, in the industry. Certainly unusual in Iowa, maybe not so much in terms of other utilities who have wholesale customers, but it's somewhat unusual to have this level of detail.
And Ted or Amy or Michelle, are there considerations related to regionalization we should take into account as we're thinking about this? I mean, does this system mesh well with the way we envision the region operating in the future? I suppose we don't know, we'll eventually RFP for a new system. So I guess perhaps that's a question for the system we find, but any thoughts or considerations we should be keeping in mind in relation to regionalization?
I think that's a really great question. I don't know that I can articulate, you know.
And I doubt I could understand anyone. So.
that would be my fault if so. I think that, you know, what we plan to do is to implement a system that certainly supports what we do now. And I think as the regionalization discussions occur, hopefully the timing is such that, you know, as we start drafting perhaps the operating agreement and we become more aware of how we might need to slice and dice expenses or categorize them differently, we would need to make sure that the setup or our configuration of the system allows for, you know, allows us to support that, what we might need to feed to the regional entity. So I don't think it conflicts, certainly, and I just think we need to be thoughtful in how we configure it.
Question. Any other questions about the financial system software?
Joel, I'm glad you brought that up, though. That has me thinking, because I think it's an additional, it brings us additional credibility if we can drill down to that level of expense to be able to share it. Because, you know, previously, I think until we started having these meetings where Amy was being so transparent, one of the criticisms of Des Moines Water Works was, we don't understand how you come up with your rates. I mean, that was a huge criticism. When we'd go to the Central Iowa rural meetings and you'd try to lay it out. And I think they thought we were hiding the ball. And this certainly is as transparent, I think, as we could possibly be.
Agreed. Well,
well said. No, I don't have any other questions. Unless anyone else does, I think we can move on to item two.
Sounds good. Amy, I think I've already given my
introduction. Yeah, you said it would be fascinating. And I think that overstates it a little and sets me up for failure, but here we go. All right, so Ted, give me a check. Can you see my presentation?
I can, yes, looks good.
Okay, all right. So today I'm gonna talk about bonds in general, because it's been a while, I think, since we've talked about Des Moines Water Works bonds, and then talk about an opportunity that we have to save some money on behalf of our customers, which is always a good story. But I do wanna give you a spoiler alert. There's been, even within the last couple of hours, you know, some information exchange related to this topic. And so I will kind of bring you up to speed on some of those developments and discussions near the end of the presentation, just to give you kind of the full breadth of the issue. But I do want to start with what I've prepared and talk about refunding. And so we're talking specifically about refunding one of our bond series, which is the 2012 Bs. We issued them in 2012. We issued two bond issuances in 2012. And so we're going to talk primarily here about the second, the 2012 Bs. We use Spear Financial as a financial advisor or a municipal advisor. When you issue bonds, you're required to get a municipal advisor. And as part of their services, they really keep an eye on the market and counsel us to when they think that it might be good to look at refunding bonds. And so that's what I want to talk about today. So what is a refunding? Because frankly, that word has a lot of different meanings and it can be confusing. So what I want you to remember is that refunding bonds is just like refinancing your house. It's when we refund, we refinance existing bonds with new bonds. The existing outstanding bonds that are being refinanced are called the refunded bonds, and the new bonds being issued are called the refunding bonds. And I'll use those terms, so I wanted to explain those because I didn't want there to be confusion throughout the presentation. The purpose of refunding debt is just like for reasons we would refinance our house. We want to maybe take advantage of lower interest rates, which right now there is a very favorable market. And when you, we all know this, when you can secure a loan at a lower interest rate or issue debt at a lower interest rate, you save money, you save borrowing costs. That's probably one of the main reasons people refinance their homes. And that's one of the main reasons that municipalities refund their bonds. Other reasons in general would be to extend a payment schedule. You might want to, pay off the debt over a longer period of time, maybe for cash flow reasons, or maybe you want to shorten a payment schedule and shorten the term that you have to pay on those bonds, or in the case of each of us at home, refinancing our house. But we are looking at it out of those three options. We are looking at refunding debt or considering refunding debt here to save money because there are lower interest rates available in the market than when we issued bonds in 2012. As we all know, the market has changed quite dramatically. And so this is really an opportunity for us to save some money for our customers. When a new bond issue is sold, the terms usually include an optional redemption or a call provision, we call that, which says you can call or pay off or refinance your bonds on a specific date. And so the call provision identifies the date on which the bonds can be redeemed prior to their scheduled maturity. When we issued our 2012 bonds, we sold bonds with this option, and that call date was 12/1/2021, which is just in a couple months coming up, meaning that we now have an opportunity for savings and can take advantage of favorable market conditions. It's not something you have to exercise, but if the market is favorable, it's certainly something that you can consider. And so Spear has come to us and said, this is something that we should consider. This could really save some money. We haven't talked about Des Moines Water Works of debt that I can recall maybe for over a year. So I also wanted to just remind you of our total debt portfolio. So I've got a chart here. I apologize, it is pretty small print, but we actually have three bond issuances that we're paying on. The first one there is a state revolving fund loan we issued in 2003, state SRF, and it matures next year. That's great news. We'll get that off of our books next year. And we owe a very small amount on that, $157,000. And those are, that's an amount that Des Moines Water Works is responsible for. That was to build a feeder main to serve our Polk City customers. So that became part of our core network. We also have the 2012A bonds. Those mature in 2023. And after December 1st of this year, we'll owe only $600,000 on those bonds. So also relatively low. We don't owe a lot of money on that bond either. We are not considering, or SPEER has looked at, by the way, refunding those bonds. But those are at a slightly lower interest rate already. And because they have a shorter window, they mature in 2023. SPEER has advised us, those really are not cost-effective for you to refund. You just need to ride those out. You're getting about the best deal that you can get on those. So those won't really be within the scope of our discussions. But what is in the scope of our discussions, really in this presentation, is that last one, and that's the 2012B. Those mature in 2025, so we still have about 4 years after we make our principal payment this year. And at that time, the amount that we'll owe is about $12.35 million. What makes this a really unique issuance, you can see by the chart on the right, is that it's not just Des Moines Water Works debt. Others owe this debt as well. This debt was actually issued in 2006 to construct Sailorville water treatment plant and also the joint Eastside tank. And then we refinanced those 2006 bonds in 2012. So it's kind of a refinanced. And so the reason that other entities are a part of that is because they purchased capacity at the time that we built Sailorville. And instead of paying cash or bonding on their own, we offered at the time to kind of sweep them into a single bond issuance that we would issue and then allocate the repayment to the different parties. So that's why that one is pretty unique. And 70% of the amount owed is actually owed by others. And then Des Moines Water Works owes the remaining 30%. And frankly, the 30% is mostly owed by our Pleasant Hill customers, our total service area, and also our Polk County customers. So not even Des Moines. Des Moines is a very small part of that. The reason that those entities were interested at the time is because Des Moines Water Works has the second highest bond rating that we can achieve, something that we've long been proud of. And the higher your bond rating, just like our credit scores at home, the higher the credit score, the lower the cost of borrowing, the better rates you get. And so because we have a very high bond rating, the total borrowing cost was lower. Plus, you know, the expenses are centralized. And so there's just a cost savings to that. And so that's how we ended up where we are with the 2012 debt. And so again, that 2012 debt is what SPEER has said to us, the B issuance, excuse me, is what SPEER has said, look, we need to evaluate whether we want to refund that when it becomes callable on 12-1. So the business case for refunding is probably pretty obvious by now, more favorable rates. The Series 2012B has a 3% coupon rate or an interest rate. And SPEER, through their assessment of the market, thinks that we could get it down to 1%. That preliminary projections, if we could get 1%, the net present value of that savings after the costs are incurred associated with refinancing, we could save up to $330,000 just over the next 4 years. So we think that that's pretty significant savings to consider for our customers. The other business case for refunding is a reduction in the amount borrowed. The new bonds will be issued for less than the $12.35 million that we owe at the end of this year. And there are two reasons that we think that the debt issuance will be lower. The first one is that early indications are that one or more participants, so West Des Moines, Urbandale, Bondurant, or Ankeny, one or more of them may wish to pay off their debt entirely and just pay it in full and walk away. And that's what my late breaking developments are about in just a couple more slides. So I have some more information on that. But the other reason that we would be reducing the amount borrowed is simply how bonds work. It's a reduction in we would see a reduction in our debt service reserve fund to a level consistent with the new bonds. And I want to explain that just a little bit more. When you issue bonds, you have to set aside a debt service reserve fund. And that fund is a restricted fund. You'll find it on our balance sheet as restricted cash or investments. It's there to protect the bondholders in case we have trouble paying. We've got money set aside that we could make the payments as they become due. And the reserve fund, there's several different ways that the reserve fund is estimated when you issue. But in general, just speaking very generally, it's about 10% of the bond issuance. So the 2012 Bs we issued, they were about $39 million. And so we had to set aside a reserve fund of about $3.9 million to protect the bondholders. So that 3.9 was 10% of the amount that we issued at the time, the amount of the bonds. And it just sits there until those bonds are paid off. As we make payments and pay those bonds off over time, that debt reserve doesn't get to go down as we make those payments. It just stays at that higher level. When we refinance or refund the bonds, we have the opportunity to resize that debt service reserve fund to be 10% roughly of whatever we issue. And so Speer estimates that the required reserve for the new refunding bonds, the new bonds, would be less than $1 million, which releases about $2.9 million out of cash, out of that debt reserve fund. And that cash has to go towards paying down the bonds. And so immediately you're taken from 2.35 to about $9 million in bonds. And so if you're borrowing less, you're paying less overall. So that's another advantage of refunding, is that you get to resize that debt service fund and use the released funds to pay down your principal. This is a conversation we could not have, I don't think, without talking about regionalization considerations, because even from the last presentation, regionalization is really a backdrop to all of the decisions that we're making right now. So I think it's important to remember this: the 2012 series matures in 2025. So the current existing bonds that we have mature in 2025. And the new refunding bonds, the new bonds, if we were to issue them, would also mature in 2025. We would not extend the term. So we are not worse off in terms of our timing. We don't create a worse situation. Regionalization discussions related to asset transfer have considered that 2025 maturity date. We've long talked about that. So the 2025 maturity of the new bonds will not interfere with asset transfer, which we've talked about in terms of regionalization, if the participants to regionalization support transfer around the fifth year. If there's support for waiting for, around year five, then this would not impede any of our regionalization discussions. However, if the participants are interested in an immediate asset transfer at the time that the entity is created, and I have not heard that based on the discussions that I have been in, that it would be immediate, frankly, refunding could be a problem. So I just want to be really clear and transparent about that. So here's the plot twist. These are the late breaking discussions that we've had over the last couple of days, and again, as early as this morning. We have confirmed that West Des Moines Waterworks and Ankeny are interested in paying off their share of the bonds when they become callable on December 1st. Urbandale and Bondurant are, based on my conversations, considering paying off the bonds. It's something that they're asking their financial advisor for counsel on. We can't really compel all the participants, to pay off early. But if everyone else wants to pay off early, then I think that that's a really good option for Des Moines Water Works as well. And so one option that would be on the table is if all the participants to the bond issue want to pay them off, we can just redeem them on December 1st, and we would have no more debt related to the 2012B. From Des Moines Water Works perspective, we would owe about $3.5 million after we get use of the reserve cash. I think we have excess revenues, frankly, from last year's really high pumpage year that we could use for that. So I think that's an option for us. So our options are to start the process to be able to refund on December 1st. And I think it's really important that the board know that we can terminate that process at any time. So the first step in that process is to set a date of public hearing. So if in August at the board meeting, we set a date for the public hearing to be at the September board meeting, and then we get information from all the participants that they want to pay off, we can terminate the process to refund. We have not committed ourselves. I should say we can terminate the process at any time before we actually sell the bonds. Once you sell the bonds, you can't go back. If all parties agree, we could pay off the bonds on December 1st. The only requirement there is that we must notify the bondholders about 40 days prior to that. So that gives us a little bit of a longer time frame. If we want a refund on December 1st, or at least leave that option open, we need to start our process in August. If we, decide that everyone wants to pay them off, we just have to give about a 40-day notice. I guess, out of full disclosure, another option would be to stay in our holding pattern and refund the bonds after December 1st. That allows regionalization discussions to finalize, which is the advantage, but it does delay cost savings. And I become worried about interest rate risk there. We never know what the interest rates are going to do. And so if we wait too long, we may lose the opportunity to save as much as we would if we started refunding on December 1st. So if we proceed with kind of setting our path forward, that would position us to be able to refund on December 1st. We would set the date of the public hearing at the August 24th board meeting. And those materials would be drawn up by our bond counsel, which is Allers. And, you would see those as a not to exceed amount of the $12.35 million. We don't have enough information. And so what's common is they just put that highest level on there so that we're covered. But in reality, we would probably be issuing bonds for less than the $12 million. At the September 28th board meeting, we would hold the public hearing. If, again, we go down this path of refunding on December 1st, I would have a call with rating analysts. At the October 26th board meeting, we would have the bond sale and award, and Spear would be in attendance for that to counsel us. Then the next step is to authorize an issuance proceedings. That's November 9th. That's a finance and audit committee meeting. So we may have to call a special meeting since we don't, the committee structure isn't set up to have a quorum. So we may require a special meeting. And then on December 1st, the bonds would close. We would receive the bond proceeds. And on December 6th, a little less than a week later, we would pay off the refunded, the old bonds, the Series 2012B. So that's what the process looks like. And you can see, December kind of sounds like it's a long ways away, but this is a lot of steps to get there. So that's why if we want to preserve the option to refund them on December 1, we kind of need to call our pocket in the August board meeting and at least start down that path, again, knowing we can step off of it. So I think that's my last slide. From there, I imagine you have questions and I'm happy to answer them.
Okay.
Amy, it's great. Anytime we can have savings like this, I think you're right. It's just the timing of when we take advantage of it. Great information. I'm glad they reached out to us.
Yes, yes. They are great to work with.
Yeah, great presentation, Amy, and this all seems positive. What, remind me, you may have mentioned this, but what time frame do you expect for hearing from the other communities about whether they want to pay off?
I think that Urbandale mentioned that he was going to talk to his board at their September board meeting. And so I think he said probably by mid-September, he would be able to give me some information on whether they would want to pay off. Which, you know, again, if that's the case, we would know that before our September board meeting even. So we have plenty of time to alter the course if that's what we decide to do. Let me ask a question. How do you feel about refunding on December 1st versus waiting until after December 1st to let, you know, those regionalization discussions finalize? Do you guys have any preference there, knowing the advantages the regionalization discussions may finalize? We really don't know that timeline. But we do run the risk of the interest rates increasing, or, you know, we delay the cost savings.
Amy, personally, I think we run the business. It's less expensive now to refinance. There's no guarantees on regionalization, even though I think this is just one more example of we are running a business correctly, not using it as a carrot to try to get people to go to regionalization. Just my own take. We've been very upfront with everyone so far, and I don't know why we'd back off from that now.
I appreciate that.
I agree. I think we should try to lock in the savings in December rather than cross our fingers and hope.
Okay. Excellent. We will prepare the board agenda with that in mind then. I appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, I think that's wise feedback. And so that means, Amy, we will bring an item to the board to set the public hearing for September. Still have the opportunity to hear. I've already heard from West Des Moines and Ankeny. We have the opportunity to hear from Urbandale, who's really the other big player. Bondurant is the last. Theirs is pretty small in terms of dollar amount. So, and if we do hear from Urbandale, which I think we very well may, and we pay them off, I think the remarkable thing for me is the extraordinarily low debt load that we will realize as of the 1st of December. For an organization this size and a city this size, it's unbelievable. So anyway, good information. You're going to say
thanks,
something.
Thanks, Amy and Ted. I think we should move on to item 3, CEO and general manager's comments.
Yeah, Joel, I'll just share one quick thing with the board today. We had the opportunity to participate in an interview for the CBS documentary show called CBS Originals. And it's a news documentary show that they'll pick a topic and do an in-depth analysis. Adam Yamaguchi was the contributor who came here today with a team and spent about 2.5 hours interviewing folks here and taking some video. And they're even going to come back tomorrow morning and videotape Bill Bluebaugh as he's gathering his 6 a.m. samples from the Raccoon River so that we can get them into the lab and get the analysis done. But they're doing a story on the impacts of agricultural production on various aspects of life in America. And so they actually reached out to us and asked if they could come and visit with us. Great questions, very in-depth. Probably will not air until after the end of the year. And it's an online news documentary magazine, I guess I would call it. So that was really an interesting experience and a great opportunity for us to tell our story on kind of a national stage. So we'll see how that, I see Jen's comment about November, but they told me it'd be closer to the end of the year, Jen, but maybe we'll see. We'll let you know, of course.
Who was the reporter or contributor, Ted?
Adam Yamaguchi.
Very interesting.
Yeah, he was someone I recognized, but couldn't have told you where I recognized him from, to be perfectly honest. But it was a good experience. We'll see how that turns out. They're going to talk to a lot of folks, and they're talking to folks on all sides of the question. They're actually going to the state fair a couple of different times to talk to folks at the fair. They're talking to folks in the environmental community. They're talking to folks in the agricultural community. So I'm hopeful that it'll be a well-balanced look at the question. But it was a great opportunity for us to once again tell our story on kind of a national stage. So other than that, I don't think I have anything topical today, Joel, so I'll turn it back to you for public comment.
We will move on to item four, public comment. Do we have any of the members of the public who'd like to comment?
I have no one in attendance here with me.
Hearing none and seeing none, that is the end of our agenda. I have a motion to adjourn. I see Sue Mowley, so moved. I'll accept that. All right. Thanks all.
Yeah.
We're adjourned.
Have a good one.